Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Steve Savitsky, and here with Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, who is the rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue. And Rabbi Goldberg gives a wonderful shiur every single week that I listen to on YU Torah. And this past week, or last week, he actually had a shiur all about this issue about transgender individuals and how we're going to deal with that in the Jewish world. And I just thought it was so interesting and fascinating. I asked him to please come on the program, and he agreed to do that. So, Rabbi Goldberg, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to participate.
It is my pleasure. So I listened to the shiur. It was really, really incredible, and it just provoked a whole batch of questions. And I think that, you know, people are talking about it, that's for sure. So and it's interesting that you started off with talking about Bruce Jenner and saying you thought he was doing a disservice to the people who are troubled with this. And could you explain that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to give the disclaimer that I am the farthest thing from an expert in this subject. The only reason I have any awareness of it at all is because within our own community there was an individual who went through a major transformation, and I got an accelerated education through that process, as well as it really sensitized me to it. So I'm not an expert, but I'm happy and eager to share what I learned in that process. What I meant is that if you look at the headlines and the articles about Bruce Jenner's transformation, it's really made a circus out of this whole issue. And most people, and I would include myself in that camp before I was exposed to the topic meaningfully, most people would cynically say, he's a sicko, he's disgusting, he's demented, there's something very deviant about it. And in his case, maybe there are components of that. But my point is that it's turned it into a circus act. A lot of people are accusing him of undergoing this just because of the financial gain, by the attention that it's drawing. Others are levying all kinds of other questions of his motivation. And I think that if it's a serious topic to be taken seriously, then to turn it into a circus act does a disservice to those who are really suffering or struggling. And if we're going to deal with it sensitively, then we have to talk about the issues and not broadcast it on the covers of magazines. And I think we're being a little quick to give awards and to recognize and to celebrate something that we should really be struggling with.
Okay. So do you think this issue is going to become, you know, exactly what happened, let's say, with gay rights, and, you know, there'll be legislation in state legislature houses and Congress and so on, and 5 years from now this will be such an accepted thing that it'll just be part of society?
That's a great question. Again, I'm not an expert, but I do think that we are evolving or devolving very quickly when it comes to many of these moral issues. I recently heard a statistic that every 5 years, technologically, the world is undergoing the equivalent of the Industrial Revolution, every 5 years. So if that's true technologically, then morally, we are evolving or devolving at a very fast rate also. And think about how the pendulum has swung on things that we once thought were so, things that we thought and excused as acceptable now, the pendulum has swung that we quickly condemn and put in a box and excommunicate and throw out certain behaviors and activities. And on the other hand, the very activities that a few years ago that we thought were deviant and now have become perfectly acceptable and normal and moral. And I think that the world at large is struggling. Look what we see going on now with this woman from the NAACP who decided that she was black because she's an African-American on the inside. And already articles are being written saying the black community, the liberal community, is furious. How could she possibly present herself as something that she wasn't? Well, her answer is, I on the inside felt like I was. So we have to, as a society, decide. Do you get to determine who you are based on what you feel on the inside, or do your genetics and your race and your nationhood and your ethnicity matter? What determines your identity and status? What feels good for you, or do the actual facts, do the data make a difference? And I think the society as a whole is going to struggle with that, and if it continues in the trajectory that we're on, it's going to move towards this notion of everybody gets to determine for themselves. It's really appropriate for this week's Parsha. It's Lahavdil, not Korach's argument, but the notion of Kol Ha'eda Kulam Kedoshim, and that everybody can choose for themselves, decentralized authority, everybody has a right for what makes them happy and to choose their own identity, is one of the major issues of the day.
So the old cliche, you can't judge a book by its cover, it's probably going to happen now at this point, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. So now we, of course, in the Orthodox Jewish community, face our own issues when it comes to this, and as a Rav of a shul, first of all, I was very surprised that when you said that you called a Gadol B'Torah to ask a question, assuming that he would basically say, you know, I've never had this, and he startled you by saying, this is not the first call I've gotten. I've gotten many.
Exactly. Exactly. I just, you know, I'm not hiding his name, and I don't want to be one of
those
rabbis.
It's fine. It's
to
fine.
Quote his name, but I didn't get his permission, so that's the only reason I'm not. But he's somebody that much of the world turns to on issues of medical ethics, psychology, and he's really exposed to the world at large and is universally recognized from all segments of the Orthodox community. And that's why I specifically, because in our case it was a communal policy issue, how I should relate to this individual, where they should sit in shul if they are welcome, and I wanted to make sure to ask somebody who universally would be accepted his opinion, and I was shocked by how much he's encountered it. I was certainly moved by how sensitive he himself was to it, but clearly, and even since then, talking to my colleagues, it has come up and will continue to come up, and it's something that we need to figure out.
So what really happened, like, let's say, in your shul, what would happen, let's say, hypothetically, what would happen if you have... By the way, I just want to understand one thing also. When you talk about a transgender, you spoke a lot about the operation, which is obviously the last step. But there are many steps in between where someone may be a cross-dresser or things like that. But I'm saying, let's say you have someone who actually has gone through the whole process, and then they show up in your shul. So what do you do?
It's a great question. So first of all, in terms of the process, in some states it's legal, in others it's just recommended, I think, to the surgeons themselves, but they don't do the surgery unless the candidate lives as the opposite gender for a year beforehand. They don't want to do the surgery, which is incredibly costly and obviously in some ways irreversible. They don't want to do it without knowing that it's going to be, at least from the perspective of the person, permanent. So they make the person live as the opposite. They would take offense and say it's not cross-dressing and it's not transvestite. Transgender means, though you anatomically or physically appear as one gender, you internally, you spiritually feel like you are the opposite. So you may not have yet changed the body to meet the soul, but the soul is already different from the body, and that's how they define transgender. So here I think there's a difference. And again, I can only really speak to our case.
Okay.
The individual, it's an amazing thing. They themselves are a Baal Tshuva, very stark, very sincere, very involved in coming to Minyan and learning, for lack of a better description, wore a black hat and a garter, were very sincere. And I already began to notice some changes about them, physical appearance, and about the way they were behaving. And we ultimately had a conversation in which they shared with me their struggle through his, her entire lifetime. So an individual who was in his early 60s, and he described that since the age of 3, he knew that he had a female soul stuck in a male body. He remembers vividly at three years old, trying on his sister's dresses and his mother coming in and yelling at him and giving him a patch and telling him we don't do that, and his already feeling very confused about who he was and why he was drawn to that. And he spent his lifetime trying to change his soul. So he got very involved in the Boy Scout, first as a participant and then a leader. He competed in athletics and sports. He did all these manly things to try to, if he could only turn himself into a man. He got married. He had children. And in his 60s, after decades of denying who he really felt he was, he felt he couldn't do it anymore and something needed to change. And that's what I talked about in the shir, and I'm grateful that you listened, but what he went through, even the halachic arguments he advanced, because at this point he was already somewhat knowledgeable to be able to advance them. So when it became clear to me that the trajectory he was on and what he was doing, I obviously tried to counsel him, tried to be supportive. I didn't try to reject him in any which way, but tried to say that while I don't believe halacha can accept or condone what you're doing, I want to play a supportive role. I offered and was eager to actually travel with him back to the rabbinic personality who first changed his life, was Makarev him, but he did not agree to go, I think because he was afraid and knew that individual would not accept this decision. And ultimately, based on counsel, I told him that during this period of transition, I'm not comfortable with his coming to the shul, because to be anatomically a man but dressed as a woman, which side of the mechitza do you sit on? If you have to go to the bathroom at shul, which bathroom do you attend? And so on. It's important to clarify, I didn't say this in the shir, But to the best of my knowledge, there's no greater risk of pedophilia or abuse because of somebody who's transgender. Because I know a lot of people react incorrectly by thinking that, oh, they're deviant and it's a risk to children and so on. There's no, from what I know, there's no correlation between pedophilia and the transgender issue. But there is a very practical question of where they sit in shul, which bathroom they use. And we agreed that during this transition time, it's simply too uncomfortable, it's too complicated, it's drawing too much negative attention. That's neither in his interest or the shul's interest, and we agreed that he would not attend. But about a year later, after he was able to afford the surgery, and despite the attempt to counsel and support his not doing the surgery, he had the surgery. He came back and he said, no, I've had the surgery, and now what? I want to be firm. I want to be part of the community. The fact that I had to correct this about myself doesn't mean that I don't see myself as being part of the observant community. I want Torah. This is my Hashem. I want everything. And that's when I called this posek, and he told me that to allow her, him, her, to sit on the woman's side of the machitza,
really?
That since she is attracted to men and she has the anatomy externally of a woman, that it would be appropriate to have her sit on the woman's side of the machitza. And I remember explicitly what the posek said to me was, it's a mitzvah to be mekarev him, not to be merachek him. I remember the posek said, there are people who drive to shul, there are people who don't make brachas before they eat, there are people who speak lashon hara, there are people who do all kinds of things, and they are not pushed away from shul. This individual made a mistake, but should not be pushed away from the community.
So, I mean, really, the deciding factor was that the person went through the process, the operation, and at that point, you said, okay, you could sit on the women's side of the machitza. But during the process, you didn't feel comfortable. So what happens if somebody walks into your shul who's going through the process? You wouldn't allow them in the shul, or you would? What would you do?
Correct. Let's say somebody comes, you know, since I gave this shiur and put this out there, not a lot of other people have, I've received a few emails, one in particular from somebody who was anonymous to me. I still have no idea who they are and where they live, but we've had a correspondence. They describe themselves as being in the more yeshivish community. He learns in the daf every day. His kids go to very firm schools. And he confides that he is a woman stuck in a man's body, struggling, has had suicidal thoughts. Every day is a struggle, doesn't know what to do. And we've had just an email correspondence. And so let's say a person like that came in the shul and said, I must confide in you, Rabbi. I'm married. I have children. No one knows this. I've had this struggle my whole life. And is not yet signed up to have a reassignment surgery. I think that person deserves our unwavering support, love, concern, any chizuk that we can give, just like anybody who's struggling with a very real issue. Somebody who says, I am a transgender. I feel like I'm stuck in the opposite, and I'm going to go through the surgery, so I'm in that year period of dressing as the opposite. I would again, I think, have the same policy that, you know, if you want to meet off campus, if I can help you, if I can support you in your Jewish connection, despite this choice, then I want to be there for you. But just not comfortable during this transition where your externals don't match your internals, your anatomy match your presentation to be able to come to the shul campus.
So would you say that, let's say, in the more Haredi world, that how do you think they're going to deal with this? Are they just going to ignore it, or are they going to, you know, come up with, you know, psak halacha and deal with it, you know, straightforward the way you're dealing with it right now?
I think they'll probably come up with psak halacha that will determine certain policies, but to be honest with you, and it's not a criticism of any community, there's so much we can learn from that community, I think that a person undergoing this will naturally wander from that community. I just don't think they'll find a place there. I think the stares and the discomfort and the comments, and it's not a knock. In our community, and Steve, I'll share with you that even after we tried to implement this, there were women on the women's side of the machitza who met with me who said, I can't concentrate in davening. I can't. I'm sitting next to a woman who used to be a man. This is such a bizarre choice behavior. This is so... I'm so uncomfortable with it. I have no experience with it. It's so foreign to me. It's not fair to the shul. It's not fair to the other rest of the women. And we had to go through that. There was a process of educating the members of the community. And to be honest with you, it reached a crescendo that there was so much pushback of people who felt so uncomfortable that I, with the individual herself, himself, I went through a process of deciding, do you want me to fight on your behalf to sensitize the community, or is it drawing such negative attention to you that it's not worth it? We ended up coming to a compromise that we have kind of a beginner service in the shul, which by definition is much more flexible and open and less judgmental and so on. And we found a place in the shul which was the correct place, but the regular minyan where there was still people who were uncomfortable, we found that compromise. And it's not something I would have imposed on her. it's something that was reached with her.
So I presume that this is going to be a big issue, only because even if the numbers are not so great, you only need one person, and then it becomes an issue, right?
Exactly. You only need one person, and you don't even need one person. You need the son or daughter, the niece or nephew of one person who is visiting, who is thinking about moving, who is moving. And there's a whole range of issues. Baruch Hashem, we have not faced many of them, most of them here. But there's going to be a whole range of issues. If a gay couple want to move to the community and have a family membership and they want to be firm in every other way, then that fact about their lives. What will be policies? I know I have colleagues who've struggled with a single woman who gets artificially impregnated. She wants to have a child and wants the mazel tov, the bris, and so on. And there's no clear halachic violation. So, and I don't mean to put these all in the same category, but my point is there are policy decisions where heretofore the firm community would never have had to grapple with, mostly because somebody who would choose these things would immediately be running away from a firm community. Today we live in a world where everyone is supposed to be so flexible and understanding, and maybe l'shvach, maybe you could say in the positive, that people want to have a firm community and still have whatever choice they're making. So communities are going to have to come up with policies. Day schools, yeshivas, communities, shuls. Very challenging.
So it's going to be yet another challenge for us. And do you think this could be a, you know, dividing line? You know, we try so much to have a big tent and try to have what I try anyway. I mean, one of my goals is always to have the Torah world united in any way we possibly can. We're so small and so fragmented. Is this going to become another dividing line, you know, in the Orthodox Jewish community?
I'm not sure. It may. I mean, the only dividing line will be, hopefully, we will all agree, kuleyama lo pligi, that you can't permit that which is forbidden. Hopefully, we'll all agree that you can't condone that which the Torah explicitly says is not okay. Where we may disagree is what level of acceptance and what level of sensitivity we should show, or should we say, look, there'll be casualties, but we have to protect our machana, our camp, and even if it means that we have to be dismissive, or even if it means we have to marginalize some, that's what's necessary to protect the holiness of our camp. There might be merits to both sides of the argument. So hopefully the argument will be narrow just to the question of what attitude we should bring, but we'll all agree. I think the bigger question, particularly in the modern Orthodox world, where we struggle to straddle a very sensitive fence between having the Torah determine our values and yet live and participate in the modern world and culture around us, we are seeing a tremendous conflict. We're at an unbelievable juncture of a clash of those values. So, for example, one person who heard this year came to me afterwards and said, you know, Rabbi, I found you very sensitive. It was very moving. You spoke about the issue in a very sensitive way. And, you know, the halacha you went through was very interesting. But I have to tell you, I disagree with your conclusion. Because if we're supposed to be sensitive and this person really would give anything not to be this way and they haven't chosen it and we're supposed to care about all people, then why do we have to have an opinion? If they want to change their gender, let them change their gender. And I said to him, that you missed the exact point. The point is the Torah does have a perspective. And there is a right or wrong. And it, just because you're sensitive doesn't mean that you can permit, you can't be matir asurim. So I think that is the exact pressure point of what it means to be a firm Jew, a Torah Jew will come. Take gay marriage. Jews have always been at the forefront of civil rights issues. And the gay community has done a wonderful job, from their perspective, of positioning this as a civil rights issue. So to be a firm Torah Jew in gay marriage automatically puts you on the wrong side of a civil rights issue. And it leaves you with this fundamental question. When the rubber hits the road, when you have to decide, when you have to choose, are you going to follow the Torah's prescription for these things, or are we going to allow the rapidly evolving modern culture mold and shape and end up distorting our Torah views to conform with those? That's the bigger question, not only for us adults, because I think we're struggling with formulating it, but in my experience, particularly with teenagers and with millennials, we may be struggling with that. They're not even struggling. In their mind, go into any Orthodox day school in this country, high school, and ask them in a classroom, if your classmate is having a gay marriage and invites you, would you attend? And I don't have any real data, but my guess would be, and this is not based on a region of the country, I think it would cross the country, day schools, modern Orthodox day schools, almost every kid would say, yeah, I would attend. I'm not judging him. If they're my good friend, absolutely. I think that children are not even struggling with this. I think we're so influenced and shaped by whatever the headline is in the modern culture of the time. And that's our struggle as Torah Jews, is to make the compelling argument of how we can be sensitive, accepting, warm, supportive, and yet maintain our very strong values.
Well, Rabbi Goldberg, you said it exactly right. Well, this is exactly why I wanted to have you on. Continue your wonderful work, your shiurim. They're just wonderful. And the ability to deal with an issue, a real issue, a serious issue, in a very serious halachic way. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much. I really,
Thank
really
you
sincerely
so much. My
appreciate
honor.
It. Be well.
I appreciate
Take care.
It. Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.